welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm glad to be back this week. I have to say, I missed an episode that I was devastated to miss. I was the very first person to listen to it. There's no doubt in my mind when it posted. I'm sitting here with Burl. Thank you for, you know, carrying the ball last week. See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
Football themed.
And we missed you too. I mean, I have never opened the show before, so I had to like figure out how to like get into this podcast, and I hope I didn't screw it up too much.
But no, it was perfect. I think I sent you notes afterwards.
Right? You did. We had
they were all good notes.
We had
though.
Kelsey Conway sitting in because we, you know, talked to the Blackburn sisters, and we're keeping the theme alive because we're going to be talking to another family operated concern in the city of Cincinnati.
Our guests today are Jeff Ruby himself, founder of the Jeff Ruby's Empire, the best storyteller. He's been a guest before. And Brittany Ruby Miller, his daughter and CEO of Jeff Ruby's restaurant Empire Now. And so I'm excited to see their dynamic together, like father, daughter. And we're going to hear all about the new Jeff Ruby's.
That's going to be exciting. For those who don't know, the original location, which was there 23 years, is closing so that they can reopen right on Fountain Square. And we're going to hear, hopefully, I hope they'll share some details that we haven't heard yet, like what to expect.
I know. For those of anyone who's following along, Brittany has the best Instagram, and she's been sharing glimpses of what's happening. But we'll ask like those reporter questions today and kind of get to the bottom of things.
And speaking of getting to the bottom of things, I think we wanted to talk about Paycor Stadium.
I know, quickly. The burning question. Paycor Stadium is lovely. You know, we watched the sign go up ourselves out right outside the Inquirer windows.
Looks so great on national television or on television. I think it's going to have its national television debut on the Thursday night game.
Yep.
But we still don't know why or how much the Bengals obtained for the naming rights from Paycor.
No, and it's very frustrating.
It is frustrating. And so I wrote about that in a column. We've been writing about it. Sherry's been doing a fantastic job covering the story. And it's not that we're particularly concerned about what the amount is, because that's really, you know, that's a matter of the market. Like, what is it? What is naming rights for the Bengals demand? It's kind of a curiosity, but it's more than a curiosity because the owner of the stadium is actually Hamilton County. And taxpayers.
Hamilton County taxpayers,
right.
Exactly.
And so without getting into the weeds on the lease, the naming rights are part of the lease, meaning that the county will get a certain percentage of the naming rights, whatever the naming rights were sold for, above and beyond an initial amount, which is
$60 million. There was a lot of math involved.
Right. And so the reason that's important is at some point, the county is going to be on the hook for some stadium improvements, and that's money possibly that could go towards that, so it's not completely on the back of the taxpayers. But we're going to try to find out.
I did. You know what? I got a lot of, like, ran around in circles, and this is nothing to do with the Bengals, because the Bengals don't have to tell us. Paycor does not have to tell us. But I would like the commissioners, I do believe, you know, have a fiduciary duty to tell taxpayers about this. And yet they're like, well, we don't know. And I'm like,
And that's a very, you know, that's a very carefully worded statement from you as a reporter who has to remain objective. I don't quite have to remain that objective. I can insert some opinion from now and again. And I would say that it is curious, more than curious. I think it's almost kind of like Bush League for county commissioners not to have asked and understood every detail about the naming rights deal, because it does affect the public. It affects, you know, it's a tax issue. It is a county-owned, publicly financed stadium, and it's a matter of public record when it comes to any deals that affect what the county can obtain other than what the Bengals pay for the lease. And so if you're a county commissioner, if you're elected and you have the trust of the voters and the community to keep their best interests in mind, it's a question I would have asked. It's a question I would have expected to have answered and to be able to answer if I'm an elected official, if I'm a county commissioner. I think that's important information. And it's frustrating to me, not just as someone who's trying to get the answers for our readers, you know, to do good local journalism. It's frustrating to me as someone who lives in Hamlin County that this information isn't available.
What I can promise everyone who's listening, Scott Wortman, who covers the county, and I cover the city, who was helping out. Scott is covering all things election, just in case everybody doesn't know. So there's a big election coming with a lot of races on November 8th, and so he was really busy, so I kind of stepped in to help him. I've always helped cover the banks. We've done that, city, county, property owned. Scott and I are going to keep asking.
And I shouldn't just pick on Hamlin County, because every week we are filling out information requests, whether they're FOIAs, FOI, stands for Freedom of Information Act, and that gives us the ability to request information from the federal government. Almost every state in the country has some type of open record or government transparency law, and we have to often cite those laws when elected officials, public agencies don't want to share public information. And so on any given week, it's not just us asking the county. We had to file a Public Information Act request to the University of Cincinnati to find out what the Brannon settlement was. We have a lawyer who's been filing motions in Pike County to make sure we have access to the trial there for the Roden family murders. And I would say that our access is the minimum as you know, required by law. There's not a week goes out where we are not fighting for information for our community, our readers. And Sherry, I think you probably at any given time have, I don't know, a dozen information requests in play.
I've been a little neglectful, honestly, except for I did the stadium but Carl was like Friday afternoon. He's like, "You've been so quiet today." He's like, "What are you doing?" Like making public record requests. He's like, as you were.
Right, because it's important. And I used the—
Not just the city, you guys, just so you know. Like a lot of things, I cover the city, but I cover a lot of the things in the city. So it's not just like, oh, these are all like city hall scandals. There's a lot of things going on that circle the city. So,
well, it was important to me to take the opportunity that, you know, kind of explaining what was going on with the Paycor situation to use it as a jumping off point on just, you know, the work we do to provide information for our community requires that level of effort. It requires, you know, having our attorney on speed dial. And, you know, if we were to rely just on press releases or public statements that were issued to us, we would get, I would say, not even half the story, like a third of the story. You have to request the documents. You have to follow the money. You have to do all of those things. And, you know, we do it day in and day out. We almost take it for granted that that's part of our jobs. But I don't want the community to take that for granted, because we're fighting for that information for you. So anyway, I write about that. At some point, we'll get that information. And I think it's interesting, too, because if the naming rights deal doesn't add up to $60 million, then the county gets nothing. And that's would be, you know—
Which that's is fine. No one is judging how much the naming rights were sold for. That's a very hard thing to judge, because it's based on market size, you know, the team itself. There's a lot of factors that go in there. None of us are naming rights experts, and we are not trying to impose our judgment. All we want to do is inform the taxpayers.
Right. And it's something that, you know, people can have their own opinion whether that's good or bad. But what's not a matter of opinion is that's public record, and we shouldn't be wondering what a publicly funded stadium. We shouldn't have to wonder and guess what the benefit to taxpayers are, the benefit to the county. So anyway, I'm off my soapbox. I'm ready to talk about a new restaurant opening up downtown, which should be pretty exciting.
The beauty of the podcast. Well, Welcome to Special Guest Time on That's So Cincinnati. I am so excited to welcome in studio two people who have really helping remake our downtown right now with the moving of Jeff Ruby's to the Foundry across the street from Fountain Square. And we are going to talk all about that and everything exciting they have coming up. Welcome, Brittany Ruby Miller and Jeff Ruby. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I thought this was the perfect time. You both have been guests in the past. Brittany, you came on during the pandemic, in which we did it on the telephone. And Jeff, you were in studio before, so we appreciate you coming back. And I can't wait to see your dynamic father-daughter together.
I heard that.
So, as I talked about earlier...
We're smiling. Nobody can see us.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
No, we got a cameraman there. I see him.
Yeah. We should describe... The scene here. So we're at a round table. Our guests are smiling. Jeff is dressed in a very dapper black derby hat and matching jacket. And he complimented my attire today, but I can't hold a candle to the fit you have on today. And then you're looking very businesslike today.
Thank
Brittany,
you. Okay.
Because there's a lot of things happening on the business side of your world right now. Should we jump right in?
Yes. Burl and I are also much more dressed up than we usually are. The newsroom tends to be casual.
Very casual. Even before the pandemic, no one knows how to, journalists have a bad rap, except for you, Sherry. You're kind of the fashion template of the newsroom.
Looking but beautiful. Yeah.
Tell us, we need to know, how are things going with the opening of the new location right across from Fountain Square? This is not just your average, move down the street. This is a premier location. Is it bigger? And what can people expect?
Yeah. You want me to take it? Okay. So if you ask me how we're doing like a minute ago, I can give you the raw, authentic.
Say, yeah, we love
that. No. Well,
we love
that.
To ask us yesterday.
No, but I will say this has been by far the best construction project that we've done. And we've opened three restaurants within 5 years. And so there's a process, but Turner Construction has been absolutely incredible. And so that piece of it, I can't say enough about how great they've been. And they're in the building as well. So Foundry's, what a amazing development. And we're proud to be there. Square footage wise, though, it is much bigger. Jeffrey B's on 7th Street, about 8,600 square feet. This one's going to be roughly 13,000. And, I look back and think how incredible it is that we even had the opportunity. And most of that, actually all of that, is the testament to my dad's relationship with our original landlord at Town Properties. And they really worked with us to be able to move that business down to Fountain Square. And but what we had been working on previously through strategic planning was really talking about what's the next thing that we want to do. And it was so fortuitous because we had been talking about we want to get into events and catering. So the 7th Street location will become an event center. And it is absolutely stunning. The design's been just, it's incredible. So we keep that space, we keep the business, we employ more people, and we open what we're calling JR's Legacy Restaurant in the heart of downtown at one of the greatest developments with 3CDC that we're very excited about.
The sign is already up.
It's not yet.
Better not be. That's another thing.
It's not up. No. It's literally still at the shop. I just got a picture of it and a video.
I saw something. Okay.
In fact, when we put it up,
I think the sign you're talking about is their vinyl banner.
Maybe.
I think they're
going
to do a little better than
that.
Okay. I had a feeling that's what she was talking about.
Yeah.
It better not, because we're going to put a big cover over it. So we do one big unveiling, a little inside. I hope our chief marketing officer doesn't kill me, but I'm going to leak it now. Is that we're going through an entire rebrand at the same time. So it'll have a totally different look and feel. But still, I think you'll see a lot of the homage to the original and to his personality. So I've done enough talking. Jump in, boss.
Throw a question my way.
So new branding that captures the personality, are you going to give us a hint of what that might look like?
No.
No is a good answer.
Well,
that's fine.
What's the truth is, in 12 days, Jeff Ruby's 7th Street will be 23 years old. And that is just ironic, I guess. But it was the first Jeff Ruby's that we did. I opened the precinct right before Brittany was born, and I opened the waterfront 5 years later. So we have 85 and 86. And then I waited 13 years. I didn't want to do another play. I wanted to see my kids grow. It was more important to see them grow than the company grow. So 13 years later, Marvin Rosenberg from Town Properties came to me and wanted me to do the Frisch's on 7th and Walnut. They're going to be doing this big backstage district, you know, with arts, theater, and all this. And we had lunch downtown. And I said, well, I'm interested, but when there's no show, how are people going to come downtown? Downtown wasn't a viable, you know, place for restaurants. So I said, how are you going to, you know, he said, I don't know how people are going to come downtown when there's no show. And that would be my job. I said, well, I'm interested, but we're opening up Las Brisas this summer in the waterfront. And every summer we open up that 2,000 capacity floating tropical nightclub with palm trees from Florida that I go pick out personally, and live bands, and I pick out the bands and the employees. It's a big job, and it's only open from, you know, Memorial Day to Labor Day. I said, I gotta stay focused on that rather than be occupied with another restaurant. So he said, okay. Then a couple weeks later, I hear that he's already got somebody doing it, and it's going to be called Chow Baby, and it's not me. I said, okay. And then and that place went from a gold mine to a landmine in about a year. And Marvin and his wife Elaine come over to the waterfront for dinner one day. Said, Jimmy Gibson, my chef, he said, have you talked to Marvin? He's in the restaurant. I said, no. I said, but he'll come over, because now I knew Chow Baby was closed. And I liked Chow Baby. I thought it was cool. But Palomino had opened up, and I think that really hurt Chow Baby, which is funny, ironic. Palomino is where we are, basically,
yes,
now. And I love that restaurant. So I walk over to Marvin and Elaine, how you doing? Everything fine? And he said, Chow Baby's closed. Would you be interested? I said, listen, Marvin, you know, I was your second choice. If I ask a girl to the prom and she says, okay, and then she comes back later and says, I'm not going with you. The quarterback has asked me to the prom. I'm going with the quarterback of the team. I say, okay. And then later the quarterback changes his mind. I'm not going to the prom with that girl. He said, well, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yabba dabba do. And I said, let me think about it. And
are you getting those quotes?
I am, definitely. So,
blah, 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 yabba dabba do.
So
we know what that means.
So long story short, and it's a very long story, but the quick study is I said, okay, and we made it. And I said, what am I going to do with it? I got a steakhouse at the precinct 5 minutes away. I got a steakhouse at the waterfront 5 minutes across the river. So I'm making a good Jewish, authentic New York deli, because that's what I like. I grew up that way, you know. And then I realized there wasn't enough Jewish people in this city to support that. There's like 200 people in this city that were Jewish or something. So, and I don't know, and to do it right, you have to really buy the top ingredients, the top corned beef, all that is not the knockoff stuff that, you know, so it's going to be expensive. And I said, well, we'll do another steakhouse. Because he had another tenant ready to go in there to do a steakhouse. So why compete with them when I'd rather compete with myself and take the spot? So we did it. And I was calling it the 7th Street Grill. The logo was done. The sign was getting prepared. We signed the lease on April Fool's Day, April 1. And my birthday is April 19th. So I had a party, what I called, I'm going to open a restaurant so I have a place to throw a birthday party for myself. That's why I'm doing this place. That's what I told people. So we had the birthday party. And it was a construction site. And the blueprints were on the walls, and I had all the names of the partners at the precinct because they gave me my start, and they were certainly invited to be partners at the Ruby's because, you know, it wouldn't be fair. So I put the names of the partners on the wall, and I just used a magic marker, and we had a party, and about 1,000 people showed, all the movers, shakers, and Indian chiefs, all the Bengals, the red. So, in fact, one of my people pointed out to me yesterday, I essentially brokered the $65 million purchase of Carl Lindner of the Cincinnati Reds that night. So Steve Schott's there, among other people. And he said, Jeff, you know Carl Lindner, right? I said, yeah. He said, would you kind of introduce him? He's over here, and I don't know him. You know. And at the time, Carl was looking at buying the Reds. So I introduced them. The deal was done. It was in the paper that they met at the future restaurant of Jeff Ruby, and he bought the Reds, and he bought the Reds in September of that year, 1999.
I feel like there's been a lot of brokering at that restaurant ever since.
Yeah, and you know, the Gotti movie was filmed there. That was turned into Spark Steakhouse, where Castellano and his driver were assassinated, and they made the whole the front of it look like Sparks. Travolta was there, Kelly, the whole gang, Connolly, the director. They all that was their central command center was Jeff Ruby's. It was kind of interesting.
So, but tell him how Jeff Ruby's came about. He was asking about the brand and the logo.
Yeah.
And,
it was going to be called, what did
you
say?
7th Street Grill.
7th Street Grill, okay.
You think I could open this restaurant without her? She helps me with everything.
Back to the question about branding. No.
I didn't think I had a name at all. So I was calling 7th Street Grill, you know. Paul Kitzmiller was the owns Core, and he was going to do my first restaurant. He does a lot of restaurants. And he said, Jeff, you got to name this place Jeff Ruby's. You got to name it there for yourself. I said, Paul, with all due respect, I know you've done a lot of restaurants. I don't have that kind of a name. I'm not going to name it myself.
Thank you, Paul.
And I've thanked him publicly. And, you know, and so he said, I'm telling you, you got to call it Jeff Ruby's. I said, you build it. I'll name it. Okay. So at the party, I had a ballot that 1,000 people could fill out. What do you want? You're our clientele. You're our future. You're our demographic, okay? Name this restaurant. Here's some choices. And the first one, 7th Street Grill. Then it was like Jeff Ruby's 7th Street, if he thinks my name should be on it. Then it was this, that, and then there was Jeff Ruby's, okay? Then it was Jeff. And then it was a fill in, name your own restaurant. Maybe somebody will come up with the best name. So at the end of the party, what's interesting about the player, I really think this is cool. So Mike Piazza is playing for the Dodgers. He's Hall of Fame catcher. He's a friend of mine. And I told him earlier, I want you to come to my birthday party. He says, okay, I'll be there. So the Dodgers are playing, I think, the Cubs in Chicago. Okay. And the party, I think, was on a Monday. And they're flying from Chicago to Montreal, but they don't have a game till Tuesday. So he tells Billy Russell, the manager, I'm not going on the team plane. I'm going to Jeff Ruby's party. He said, you're a member of this team. We have batting practice in Montreal Monday. You are going on the plane with your team. He said, I told Jeff Ruby I'd be at his party, and I'm going. He flew privately, took a charter, whatever he did, the Delta, and he went and showed up at the party and then slept. And the next day, he went and flew to Montreal. That's how important it was, this party.
We'll have to see how he hit that next Tuesday without taking batting practice.
So anyway, the employees went to Madonna's down the street. Which is still open. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's quite a tribute to them.
I was just in Madonna's.
I mean, they're still open.
I want to know why. Tell me the story.
No. You know, downtown Cincinnati, other than us, they're
I say
long.
Why, because that's a late night spot.
That's
a late night. Where were you before
they've
that?
They've been longer than we've been there. So the employees came back.
So fun.
And I think it was 850 to 900 people just checked off Jeff Ruby's. Jeff Ruby's. I said, Paul, I'm glad I came up with that idea. Look, everybody wants to call it Jeff Ruby's.
Well, I'm glad you did.
So that was our brand. I have a biography. It's a soundtrack of my life. And one of the chapters, every chapter is named after a song. And that song is the old Jim Croce song, I Got a Name. You remember? And it's
That's
a song
a great
about
song.
Him having a name. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that chapter is I Got a Name. I didn't know I had.
Well, when you say you're going to rebrand, though, you're still going to keep the name, right?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a new look.
A branding.
Actually, it hasn't been. You should refresh, you know, every once in a while. We haven't refreshed the logo for maybe 13 years.
All right, so we get a logo refresh. I'm curious. And, you talk about all the history that happened on at the location on 7th Street. You talked a little bit about that. You walk in there, and it just feels like, you know, it's nostalgic. It's everything a steakhouse should be. It's got the local flair because of all the pictures you have on the wall with, you know, local celebrities, national celebrities, global celebrities that you've got pictured there. How do you capture that nostalgia and the feeling of that, you know, now 23-year-old steakhouse in a new space? I'm looking at you, Brittany, because he's going to defer that to you.
I talked long enough. It's your turn.
No, I appreciate that. I think, you know, the main goal is you walk into a restaurant, you don't have to have the logo. You know when you walk in a Jeff Ruby restaurant. And what people don't know, this is one of the critical pieces that we're trying to pull through the refresh, is that Jeff Ruby is an incredible designer. So, and he goes all over the country to find one of a piece, you know, one of a kind pieces that are in each restaurant. Everything is handpicked. And so.
And you do that personally, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. So there's
even stuff from Italy, which I didn't go to Italy for. I've been to Italy.
We should do that though.
But we brought stuff from across the pond too. That's antiques, one of a kind.
But chandeliers.
That's like all of those. That's one of the issues today. Anyways, but it's Art Deco. It's, you know, it's such a big piece of his story in the restaurants, and so that was important to capture. But the restaurant is a collaboration truly between the designer and him. And
Brittany helps.
And so I think I add a little bit of a feminine touch to it, but I don't get rid of, you know, I'm not going to stifle an artist with a paintbrush. So that's not my job. I will try to keep a budget on track and keep us on schedule.
That seems difficult.
But so are you on schedule?
We are on schedule.
And the opening is scheduled for?
So we're scheduled to open October 8th. You know, and one of the things I think is important to know, so he used to do these over-the-top VIP birthday parties. At one point, it was like the Guinness World of... Book of World Records for the longest buffet line across the Purple Bridge. I think it was about 5,000 people. And we did that. We kept that theme when we did, you know, Lexington, Louisville, Nashville, Columbus, because it's not our hometown. And we wanted to invite, as he said, the movers and shakers, the media, and do this big thing. At this point, you know, if we were to do a big VIP party and say, hey, you're picked, please come. I mean, we would just offend so many of our loyal, longtime guests. So it's really just we cut that ribbon October 8th and we're open for business. So we close down at the 7th Street location on October 2nd, which will be a very emotional day. The good news is I don't think there's going to be too many tears because we know we're keeping it and turning it into something that we're very excited about. But it's the last day that will be a restaurant. And then we just close down. We go over to the new site. We train on site for the next few days and open on the 8th.
Double the size, right?
It's pretty big. Yeah, it's
12,648 square feet inside.
He's the numbers guy,
not including storage, not including the patio. All in, it's all over 15,000 feet.
Wow!
But what Brittany is saying, you know, it's and I think what you're asking is, how's it going to be different? And what? First of all, every restaurant that I've done, and since Brittany's been, you know, where she's in the companies, it's been we've done. But starting out, I write a story. Every restaurant tells a story. And in fact, downtown on 7th Street, it was my story of my life growing up in the restaurant business. So I brought back all kinds of things from my memory from 8 years on, old up and up. And working at, you know, I started working at the restaurants when I was 8 years old. I was working in a restaurant kitchen, cooking when I was 12. So every restaurant tells a story. But if I can't create a restaurant that's different from anything else I've ever done, I just don't open that restaurant. We're at that point now with Brittany. We just don't do it. If can't come up with something different, let's pass. And there's two ways really to get in the restaurant business. You can do what everyone else is doing and try to do it better. Or you can do what no one has ever even thought of doing and not even invite comparison. Mm-hmm. And what we do, we don't invite comparison because it's just different than anything. And we try to keep it fresh from what we've done in the past. The precinct, the waterfront looked nothing like the precinct. And Jeff Ruby's looked nothing like the waterfront or the precinct. And we go on and evolve that way into and then things change. You know,
I think people are going to walk in that restaurant and it's going to have Jeff Ruby splashed all over it, but it's going to be more refined. I would think the mm-hmm. finishes, it's going to be elevated to the next level, and I think people are going to be really truly blown away. At least we hope so. It's again those one of a kind pieces that you can't get anywhere else, that, you know, you don't have to have a JR logo on everything to know where you are. And then when you look at it's just not only the design of what the exterior, the interiors look like. I mean, we did a full, we called it great to greater off the great, you know, the book, good to great, but ours, one of our strategic goals is great to greater. And from uniforms to menu, to beverage, to service, to tableside service. I mean, it's truly, It's been a massive undertaking for our team in an exciting way, because we're just trying to make sure that we are at the top of our game and being as excellent as we know that we can be. So that's pretty exciting. I also want to give a shout out to both of my brothers, because it's definitely not just me. My brother Brandon has been just absolutely crushing it with the project management and looking at all, because we've got a million other projects going on right now. That's what people don't know. It's like, oh my gosh, you're so busy right now opening a restaurant. It's like we have six other construction projects happening at the same time. And but that's what's so cool. And Dylan on the talent side, and
he's got the most difficult job in America,
which I don't disagree with.
Finding the people
and making sure the culture's there.
But I want to go back before I forget. Six other construction projects. Can you tick off a few of what those are?
Well, we'd certainly have the foundry. That's a massive undertaking. We've got the event center. That is a Jeff Ruby event center.
So that's a total refit of the 7th
Street
space.
Everything's getting gutted. And it is absolutely stunning. I mean, I think one of the best ways to describe that are the high-end finishes in the dark, rich wood and emerald green. And it's just, it's regal. And so that's a big one. And then next year, we're planning right now. So we're in design phase to close Jeff Ruby's Louisville for about a month and do a complete refresh there. We're looking at, we did a lot to Carlo and Johnny. One of the things, and my dad is my biggest mentor, and you can see, I mean, the viewers can't, or listeners, I can't see the passion when he talks about restaurants. That has been the most inspiring thing for me as a kid, is just to see the passion he has for restaurants. And he's always taught us that, you know, we've got six sister restaurants that need the love as well. You know, we don't want to open the foundry and people forget about the precinct, or they forget about Carlo and Johnny.
No one's ever forgetting about the precinct.
No, I don't think
keeping
so.
Keeping the quality from slipping at the other restaurant. That's why we don't do 50 places.
It's keeping your foot on the pedal there.
Was there a time where you were expanding too quickly, where you struggled with quality? Was that a lesson hard learned, or have you always been
I waited, like I said, 5 years before the waterfront, 13 years before Jeff Ruby's. Then I think what Chester's Roadhouse became of, not Chester's, excuse me, they were across the street, Charlie's Oyster Bar. And that went to the courthouse auction and I bought it. But when Brittany came on board, what she's put together is an incredible corporate team. When I started, I had me. And I had a secretary, and she's built it. The company has evolved, and the growth has been able to happen because of her and Brandon and Britt. The interesting thing, and Dylan, the interesting, I said I didn't want the company grow until the kids grow. That I didn't have a father. I raised myself, so I wanted to be the father. The ironic thing is, after they grew, the only reason the company could grow was because of those three kids, you know? And by the way, and she gave me, on this project, she gave me an unlimited budget.
That's not true. And I don't know where he dropped that up.
No, and I exceeded it.
I can tell
if
you.
If you say it, it happens.
Yeah, no, she gave me an unlimited budget, and I exceeded it. And that's what makes these places so good, the extra stuff. But that's how we grew with what she was able to do upstairs and, with that office and the people. I mean, people that were the team.
Did you know? I mean, I've talked to other restaurant owners in town, and it's not always a foregone conclusion that the kids want anything to do with the business. You know, they see how hard the restaurant business is. They watch how their parents toil. And they go, like, get law degrees or go to med school, and they just, you know, they don't want to work in the restaurant business. Yeah. What happened here? How did that family come together and form a corporation?
I wanted them to create their own identity. I didn't want them to follow my footsteps. I want them to be themselves, and I didn't try to drive, you know. They all three started, like, Brandon and Dylan started service.
I was undercover. He said, don't hire. I was 15 as a hostess.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just went to Charlie Bledsoe, and I was like, hey, I want to work as a hostess. And he showed up one day, and I was there.
No way. So didn't know that you got hired as a hostess at a different restaurant?
At the waterfront.
At the waterfront.
Yeah.
Okay, okay, I gotcha.
Anyway, she...
I did hostess at El Coyote, though, so before that. But
what... She had an opportunity. She was interning with ESPN and Aaron Andrews and Mike Tirico and Kirk.
I had a stint.
She had all this opportunity, including on local TV here on the sports, on the network TVs here.
Brew and Vogel, God love them.
She's all over the country doing on the field, little
sideline reporting.
Exactly.
And she he's a proud dad. He's definitely overstating it. And I had a couple of stints.
And if her knowledge of the sports and her appearance and her articulation, she was cut out for this. And I said, listen, why don't you try this? And just if it doesn't work out, if you don't like it, it'll work out. But if you don't like whatever, then you can come back in the restaurant. And she said, no, I don't want to do that. So that's.
I'll tell you the reason why. I went to culinary school and I fell in love with food. And I called him and I said, hey, I want to be a chef. This was after my undergrad at UC. And I only went to culinary school to like have credibility in the kitchens and to be able to make sure I, you know, knew what I was talking about. And that's where I was just like, this is amazing. And then we had some really cool Food Network stuff happen. And I'm like, I really actually like talking about food a lot more than I do. So I would just like get on the local news and just go cook whenever I could. And, but I wanted to be a chef and I think at that point I was managing at Belterra and he said, you're not going to be a chef. I want you to come to the corporate office eventually. I kind of, you know, now that we know that you're in this business and he always made us work every position. I was in the operations for probably 15 years, from everything from hostess to line cook. And, he said no. And so I, in spite of him, I opened a catering business for a year. And then I realized that's kind of a hobby. It's like, what should I really do here? And anyway, so that's how it happened.
But she was traveling to Colorado with that one show out there in a barbecue, whatever it was, grill, cooking elk or whatever you're talking about.
But
he never pressured us.
It sounds like the timing worked out because, you were at the point where you needed someone to serve as the point person on the, I guess, to be more strategic.
I wanted her to get trained. And she's very got confidence. And she's.
Where does she get that from?
I don't know. I'm very shy and humble. So she's constantly, Dad, I think I'm ready to be this or be that. And I said, not yet. And she said, no, I'm telling you, I can do whatever position that she was asking for. I said, Brittany, you can't cross the finish line without running the race. You got to run the race first.
So, I came out of UC, I was ready to put on a power suit. He's like, you're putting on a server suit, right. And you're going to serve for a long time. And I did. And it was the greatest.
An old friend of mine that actually was the GM at the Waterfront, Russell Mankus. And he was the chef at the Russian Tea Room. He was the food and beverage director at the St. Regis in New York City. So he finally left me and went, you know, opened up resorts in Mexico and all with the Hilton Company. So I said, listen, Russ, if you... you ever get tired of making all that money? I can't pay you that, but you want to come back to Cincinnati, just let me know. So every time I go to Chicago, I would stay at his hotel. He opened up the Conrad in Chicago. Then they moved him to upgrade the Drake, the most legendary hotel in Chicago. They moved him over there because that place needed help. And so I'd stay at the Drake and whatever. We get to talk and meet, and we always stayed friends. And then one day he said, I'm about ready. I'll give you 2 or 3 years. I'm going to retire from here. And that was who I wanted to mentor, Brittany, and systemize the company and take the company from a ma and pa into a very well-organized, systematic, type of restaurant where we're all on the same page, where if we open a restaurant in one city, they're doing it exactly the way they're doing in the other city. And all the policies, all the procedures, all the controls, all the marketing, it's all one, instead of everybody going in their own direction. So Russell came in with that, and nobody had better experience. He had better experience than me. Not so much in restaurants, but he knew. He was a chef. He was a food and beverage director. So
he was a data guy. I always said Russell Mankus, and his middle name should have been Metrics. So everything had to have a metrics
everything
to it.
Everything is that now, everything. Though. That was very forward-thinking.
You're right.
I think I asked him, what's a metric one day?
Yeah, but it was cool because I never worked outside the business, really.
Give me an example of a metric that people might not think is obvious when it comes to your restaurant.
I'll never forget. He would sit down at the office, at the desk, and he would say, Brittany, how do you know you're as great as like your employees think it is? Like you say that because people tell us it's the best, or they had a great experience and they fill out a comment card. And you know, he's like, no, prove it to me. If you look at your competition around town, how can you prove that you are better than the competition? So 101% of the competition. Well, I can't prove it. And but anyways, we that's what we strive for now, and that's what there's little pieces of holding our teams accountable and pushing and challenging to say you got to be better than the comp, so you got to be 101%. And it's looking
track.
We track it, where you've got everything from Open Table to TripAdvisor to Yelp, you get all these, and it's all based on 5 stars, right? Or a 5-point system. And so looking at where our scores are, looking at where the competition is, who we think the best competitors are, and we measure ourselves against what those scores would be.
That Hilton experience he had gave him that experience.
Gotcha.
And that I didn't have. I worked for Weingarten Hammonds for 11 years at a hotel company here in Cincinnati, and so I had some of that. But what he had, he brought a whole nother. And then, of course, Brittany took it.
What's interesting about that, we have 7 restaurants in different markets. Cincinnati has the highest score. Cincinnati has the highest out of all. When we look at our list of competitors, and I love my dad's quote that competition is the cure for complacency. And so when we look at our scores here and you look at any of our other markets, the food scene in Cincinnati is always exponentially higher than the other markets that we're in from a competitive benchmarking. And I think that's so cool, especially when, you know, you and I spoke during the pandemic, and you know, it's like today I saw a text come through on the Cincinnati restaurant text thread that we have, and somebody's looking for like a printer right now, you know, somebody got broken into. And so everybody truly, I just feel like after the pandemic, everybody banded together and here we are. And so it's not so much as saying we're the best. What it does is it just tells you the city is amazing with the food scene, and we just want to stay true to who we are, which is excellence. That's what one of our core values is, be excellent.
Has your post-pandemic rebound gotten to the point where you're at where you were before the pandemic?
Yeah, we are definitely. The demand is there. I think I've never, for us, this is for our business, I have never felt so blessed to be in a celebratory fine dining industry. Like, that's what he chose to do. He didn't choose to go and do a burger joint. There's nothing against the burger joints, but I do believe that what we found through the pandemic was, you know, our motto used to be come to celebrate life. It's during the pandemic, it was come to escape life, like just get away from all this. And so people would save up, and they do. They come once a year, and it's you know, we're an expensive restaurant, and hopefully we put our we make sure that people feel the value when they come. And like, that was we want people to walk away saying that's the best money I've ever spent. Right? You're gonna go in there and spend money, but hopefully it's an experience. But where I've seen the demand now is, I think people still. Like, I feel very secure in this space that we are in because people need something to look forward to. If you can't travel, if you can't go out of town, if you can't go on vacation, you know what? You could still go to Ruby's. You could split a steak. You can split a salad. You can still make it happen if you save up and for our demographic, for our client or for our guest. And so the demand has been incredible. We are definitely doing well. Where I 100%, we're all in this together, is the labor crisis. We're feeling better about, and you know, the supply issues that we were having, but the labor
staffing issues. You mentioned briefly that your brother Dylan is the one who is.
Yeah, God bless him.
And that's him. He's got the hardest job. Is it?
He does.
I mean, going from 8,600 to 13,000 square feet.
Yeah, we have all the people we need, which is amazing.
Set.
Yeah, when we furloughed 624 employees, we probably kept 20 on at that point, and we're up to about 801 right now. So,
I mean, I will say that I treasure. So I agree with the celebratory, but I treasure it more now.
Yeah,
because I've always appreciated that. But now I can look back on it and be like, thankfully, I was able to do that, and we can do that again. And it means more now.
Yeah. No,
I'm not having it for a little bit.
That's good. And also, it's, you know, we did put items on the menu, like, you know, the burger that's on there, which I think is just an amazing burger. But there definitely is a way that you can come in and you don't have to get, you know, a 72 aged tomahawk that's, you know, bigger than your face.
Although there's nothing
face.
Wrong with
Although,
that. Although,
that's my favorite one.
I always said, but who gets that?
I had
that?
An 85-day age last night.
There's still some approachable dishes on there.
I just wanted to taste it, you know, to see, make sure the quality.
You got to.
So I want to taste it. Neil had, and the rest of the teams, you know, that was back there, just went away.
I'll give you another Rubyism. People don't go to restaurants because they're hungry. They can go to the refrigerators for that. People come to our restaurants to celebrate life. And I grew up with that. And so the food, has to be great. It's got to be the experience. And I think people are coming to the restaurants post-pandemic because they want an experience more so than they really want. I mean, it's great steak and great food, and I don't want to discount that. But they're coming to get away and to have an experience in their lives.
Along that line, last night I was at the restaurant, at the 7th Street Steakhouse, Jeff Ruby's. I walk across the street, because I'm going to go home and get my car. And I'm standing on the corner, and I'm looking at the restaurant. And there's this elderly woman walking down the sidewalk with a cane. And about 10 feet behind her is her husband walking with a cane. And they're slowly going into the restaurant, and they walk in the door there. And I said to myself, this means a lot to them. This is very important.
So you turn around and go back in?
I just looked and I said, man, they are celebrating life tonight. They didn't look like they had a lot of money, which sometimes can be deceiving, but they're walking with a cane, and they're old, they're slumped, and this is important to them. We cannot let them down. This is, one of them's Jimmy Buffett, and the other one's Diana Ross. As far as, and I've always, and of course, Brittany's taken it further, we treat everyone like they're important, and they're a celebrity. But to these two people, and it just dawned on me, like I always knew it, but to see it, how much they're coming to this restaurant. And it's an effort because you got to walk with a cane and everything else, and they got to have a great time. And I'm sure our people do it. You know, I didn't have to run in there and say, "Make sure you treat these people nice," because
they know what to do.
They know. They're great.
Well, and you're still there, and because I was in 2 weeks ago to celebrate a birthday, and we were treasuring it because we were like, "Is this the last time we'll probably be in this space where we've celebrated so many things?" Mm-hmm. Throughout our friendship since I've moved here, and you were sitting out on the patio, and you were just kind of taking things in.
That's his office. It's his cigar patio office.
So nice. I was going to ask.
Was I doing besides smoking a cigar?
That's all. You were just sitting. You seemed to be taking things in. It was
allowed?
A lovely evening.
Yeah. Are you allowed to have a cigar patio on Fountain Square like you have on 7th Street?
Yeah.
Okay. Just was wondering.
Bar. We got a cigar bar. Well, it's the same city. It's 3 blocks away.
Right.
Plead the fifth on it. Well,
people light up a cigar. Don't ask for forgiveness. Or don't ask for permission.
No,
ask for forgiveness.
No, it's open.
Okay.
It's the same thing, like outside.
I mean, you never know with this city. There could be some weird Fountain Square.
Next.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay.
What cigar bar?
We'll leave that there. But you can smoke a cigar on the patio at the new location.
People are going to smoke cigars on the patio.
Okay.
That's
gotcha.
How I'm going to answer that one.
Are there any surprises on the menu?
Oh, it's over the top. It's
ridiculous.
I mean, it's still a steakhouse. It's an elevated.
So we like to break news with this podcast. Can you give us some?
They said when they're opening, but we'll take
on the menu
side
or anything.
What some of the Eric Clark stuff going on?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's no. He'll kill me.
Okay.
We have big surprises. Yeah, that are very neat.
I will tell you this.
All right, so Jack,
here we go.
Let me just say
the pens are out.
This is going to be a steakhouse that's reimagined. It's totally different. Okay,
but yet still be unmistakably Jeff Ruby's when you walk in.
Well, you don't even need a sign, like she said. You know, well, this
who
is
was it? We just catered at the concert that Jack Harlow, right?
Jack Harlow.
Okay, so he was. He was going to do a party. This is a little hint, I guess. Sorry, right. Eric Clark. Don't kill me. It'll all be worth it. People will come in dying for it.
They were coming for dinner. 30 people.
Yeah.
And then he was really running. He went from Detroit to Pittsburgh. He had like 4 concerts in 4 parts of the country in a day in a row. So he called, or his people called, said, listen, we have to cancel. He's exhausted. He can't, you know. But can you bring it to the stadium? That's how it happened. But he was cool enough to let us know that he couldn't make it. So they took it, and that's
so. Since you used to dabble in catering, this was no big deal. You were like, "I got this."
Yeah, right. No, I didn't do it. They did, but he did a huge chocolate shoe,
it
sounds like a chocolate shoe.
It was
first
Memorial
of all,
Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredible. But from a flavor, I've tasted
did the
it.
Chocolate shoe?
Excuse me, Labor Day.
Eric Clark.
And he's your pastry dessert guy?
Yeah. He started in there, and now he's all creative.
Cool. Okay.
He's one of those creative people, but he.
A chocolate
shoe. You know, he did a chocolate shoe. However, it was a newbie, so New Balance, because that's what he wears. And so it came in the full-blown box.
New Balance, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Branded Jeff Ruby, but it looked like a true. And so he's taken videos. I mean, it was so cool. It's just, it's whimsical. It's fun. We've got to still stay true to who we are, but we make sure that the chefs have the freedom to do what they want. And they did. Now, it doesn't go on the menu unless it goes past his taste buds or mine or our, you know, quality assurance guy. And so if it's not broke, why fix it type of mentality. But they all know that if there's something that is better, let's taste it. And there's some great, I will just say, it's a lot of table side dishes. And also on the cocktail side, there's a lot of very cool table side cocktails that are going to be happening.
Like the Instagrammable moment.
It's all Instagrammable moments. Okay. Yeah. That was actually,
you get me.
That was the goal. And that's what our designer said all the time. He goes, it's an Instagrammable moment right when you walk in. There's like a step and repeat with a 10-foot bull and that he found.
Can I tell him about the piano?
Yes, you can.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if,
by the way,
speaking
Jack Carlo is all over the world. He's playing all over the world. And I wasn't there. Bowie, a quality assurance guy, Court, Nick Ellison, and Eric, they were all there. Okay. And plus, he gave our employees 30 tickets to the concert because they couldn't, he didn't make it to the restaurant, and he gave them a ticket. Yeah. So when he says, it blew his mind. I've never seen that. I got to take picture. I got to take video. He was really a guy that's well traveled like that to totally impress somebody that has seen it all. Well, he hadn't seen it all until he saw this.
He hasn't seen your piano, though.
No. And
describe so the piano.
Tell those. Tell
so the piano. This is supposed piano, to be an amazing piano. Describe piano, this, please.
Pardon me.
Please describe it. Oh. It does seem like it's going to be amazing.
Well, it's. I get a lot of my stuff from New York for the last 20 years from these dealers that have showrooms in New York City on Park Avenue, Central Park, on 50 West 58. It they got a five places in New York City, and it's all really expensive stuff. Most of it's not antiques, but it's where I started crystallizing the restaurants with the chandeliers they have there, and. So there was a 1865 Baby Grand Steinway piano. And I looked at that and I said, oh my God. I said, what do you want for this? Don't worry. We'll negotiate when you buy everything later, okay? Well, it was $250,000. That's what I said. I'm not paying I can't, you know, this is not a museum or whatever. This is a restaurant. Don't worry. Just keep picking everything else you want. You're going to buy a lot of stuff and we'll figure it out. So it was made of mother of pearl and 24 karat gold plated bronze. And it's from 1860, and a Steinway. There's nothing better than a Steinway. What's ironic was the building next to the building where they were in was the original Steinway building. I saw it on a sign up there, engraved into the cement there when I was standing across the street. So it was the piano from 18, and then in their other showroom, I think at Central Park, there's two torchères that are about 15, 20 feet high. You know, with the aren't floor lamps that, you know, have all those chandeliers on top of them. They're made of mother of pearl and 24 karat gold plated bronze. I said, this
is
crazy.
It was meant to be.
It wasn't part of the piano. Pianos don't come with.
By the way, this is what I was talking about. His passion. Just the passion about picking things out.
And the unlimited budget.
Oh, yeah, but back to the budget.
And the unlimited budget.
He did not pay $250,000. Let me just get that real clear.
No,
Cincinnati.
No, well, and they wanted about $20,000 per torchere. So it was going to be a $300,000.
But once you start bundling stuff, because I watch Pickers.
There you go.
I understand.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was bundling. And so so that stage is going to have these two chandeliers, this two torchères next to the next to the piano, and the stage is going to have stage presence, even if there's nobody on the stage.
So is the stage going to be behind the bar, like in Nashville?
Yeah, just
in Lexington and Louisville.
Gotcha.
And the waterfront. I started that at the waterfront.
Who's playing that $250,000 Steinway on opening night?
We're bringing in our guy from Nashville. He's the best in Nashville, and he can play and sing, and he's coming in for the opening.
But local talent.
We got a bunch of
talent.
We're going to have bands, too. You know, live bands. So,
if you'll say yes, I have a video from Nashville. I went to the playoff game, and it was
Jamie.
An amazing evening of you and he singing at the piano. I do have that. Can I put that on the website?
Did I sound okay?
You sounded amazing.
Sounds awesome.
Then when I heard you were doing this, I was
immediately thought back
to that moment and how incredible it was.
One of the things
I don't think people know how amazing his voice is.
No, it's not.
He gets so mad at me. I'm like, get up and play this one. Sing this one.
One of the things I saw, you can say, what experience did you have? So one day at the Jeff Ruby's here in Cincinnati, I walk over, there's Toby Keith sitting down there with his, I think it was his wife, and I went back down there just to say hello. I met him once backstage once, but he didn't know me. So I walked over and I started singing "Who's That Man," which was one of my favorite songs that he did, and I used to sing it with our piano players. I start going and singing "Turn Left at the Old Hotel," and I'm doing the whole thing. He goes, "Sit down." Next thing you know. 4 years ago yesterday, because the guy videotaped it, was having a cigar with me the other night at Ruby's. He's singing with me at Ruby's. And
I love that bar.
He sang that, and he changed the lyrics to beer for my horse.
Right here in Cincinnati.
And he's changed words to me throwing OJ. He changed the lyrics.
A moment in time.
And he's singing Dock of the Bay, and I'm on the cigar patio. I said, that's my song. I sang that song with my band in college. That was one of my songs.
That's your signature song, yeah, Dock of the Bay?
So I joined it with him. So from there, Toby Keith has now sang in three states at our restaurant. He sang in Nashville with me. He sang in Louisville with me. He sang at Jeff Ruby's in Cincinnati with me. And where else? Lexington, yeah, I don't think.
Well,
he's
and
been
you sang with Garth Brooks in Nashville.
Oh, Garth Brooks in Nashville.
I think we should hear you say. You should like right now. Just drop it.
So Garth Brooks is having a party at a place, and he chose our place. There was a thing called the Diamond Awards. And it was the first time, it was in Nashville, a country's artist won that. So his people decide they're going to have their after party at our place in Nashville. Well, it was a
cool place to have a restaurant, by the way. Garth Brooks wants to close your restaurant down and do a party.
200 people. In fact, they have these huge crystals, a diamond crystal. I got one. It'll be over there. And Dylan got one. And he was with Trisha Yearwood, his wife, and we greet him outside. We took a picture with him outside.
He's so nice. They're both so nice.
He comes inside. And Trisha actually did some songs up there, and we had our band up there. And it was just an after party, after the thing. So, and it was private. And I go over to him. I said, Garth, you want to sing a song with me? It's the most played song in the history of radio, the most played song ever on radio. You Lost That Love and Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. And he said, I don't know. I said, they got the lyrics right there. They got these computers these days, these iPods, tablets, whatever they got.
Yeah. It's like a karaoke moment with Garth Brooks.
Most of these singers, they're just reading it off of the thing. So I said, I know they have it. You can follow the words. Okay, you'll be Bobby Hatfield. I'll be Bill Bentley.
He made it in an offer he couldn't confuse.
So
you made him sing the high
I'm going to do it.
So,
let's karaoke.
You made Garth sing the high part.
So anyway, my son Dylan is with his manager, Randy Bernard, and he says, what's Jeff doing? What's your dad doing? He says, he's going to have Garth go up there and sing with him. He said, Garth Brooks, Dylan, does not go in bars or restaurants and has ever once sang on stage with anybody. And he said, you don't know Garth Brooks, Dylan. And Dylan says, you don't know Jeff, my dad. And next thing you know, we're singing. We did the song. It's recorded. People are videotaping it. And I was outside on the patio having a cigar later. And they're inside. Everybody's inside. And Dylan comes out with a $20 bill. I said, what's that? He says, I bet Randy Bernard $20.
That's funny. Actually, that picture is going to be in the Legacy Room. Or in the Jeff Ruby Room at the new restaurant.
Okay.
He bet Randy Bernard, Garth's manager, $20. I'm betting on my dad. He's going to get him to sing. And he won, and Randy gave him the $20. I said, well, Dylan, without me, you don't get give me 10 of it. He said, no. No. He said, I'm not giving you half of it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, I can't believe you squeezed in time for us with everything on the punch list here, but
the punch list is large.
Yeah.
So to the listeners, you know, we had a hiccup today, two different hiccups on the construction site. I'm like, listen, I got this one. You just go. I know it's going to eat you alive during the hiccups.
I'm
fine.
He's really
worried about you. I'm like, no, I'm going to be able to keep my cool, even though a chandelier came in 3 feet longer than it should be. No. That's fine. Are you going to be able to keep your cool? But I think that's the beauty of our relationship is, And especially with my brothers too, it's just like, I think we have one of the highest functioning family businesses I've ever seen. And it took a lot of time to get there, but being able to work together and participate over the past 5 years, just building these restaurants and doing that as a family has been pretty awesome. And I guess the Foundry building will be, you know, you'll have all the little Ruby fingerprints all over it. And, you know, hopefully generation three is interested in the business.
What's really true, like she said, Neil Bortz and Town Properties and Marvin made this possible for us to move. But the other people that made it possible, obviously, 3CDC.
Yeah.
You take 3CDC out of Cincinnati, you got Dayton. You know, this is who's responsible.
I'm writing
for
that one
this.
Down. That's pretty good.
You know, and that's who's really.
I know what they've done here.
You know,
so they.
I defer the credit to them and also like to Town Properties.
Great vision.
It's hard to believe like the Foundry was the old Macy's building.
It really is.
And it's
Macy's and Palomino and Brooks Brothers and Tiffany, and there was that bookstore there.
And there's major tenants there now. I mean, you got Deloitte, it's Turner. DM, they can come
DMG,
down. And,
what is it? The construction DMG.
I don't know. I didn't know that one. I don't know.
It's divisions.
Oh, divisions. The maintenance.
Yeah. Well,
I thought you said the construction company.
Well, yeah.
But divisions.
Division.
I don't know.
DMG.
Sorry, right. Gary Mitchell's company.
Well, you almost brought us full circle because you talk about how vibrant downtown is now. And 23 years ago, when you were pondering opening up Jeff Ruby's One, you were concerned that nothing was going on down here. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's fair to say that you and other restaurant owners were the ones that sparked the Renaissance?
He's not going to take that credit.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I said, you know, everybody said, don't do this place. Cincinnati is dead. Downtown is dead. I literally, before I made a decision, I walked the streets at night of Cincinnati downtown. And I said it publicly. I think it was in the paper. I said, Cincinnati's not dead. It just sleeps late. it goes to bed early. I said. Mm-hmm. It goes to bed early. That's what I said. And we got to keep it up longer. And you know, so
he took a chance.
It was a chance. There was
he
nothing
took a
there.
Chance. Took a risk.
There was.
But then you get like Dan Wright and OTR, you know, mm-hmm. and you see all of the development down there, and it's takes. You know,
and then the Masonette closed in the Normandy, and we were the only ones that's still there from that period. But yeah, like you said, and there's a lot of great restaurateurs. You got Jose, you got Dave Falk, you got, and then Thunderdome. I mean, gosh. So now most of them went over the Rhine, which is. I told Guy Fieri on TV, that's the best restaurant area in the whole town when he did that thing at the Belgium.
I think that goes back to like looking at the actual data, and it shows if you look at the scores. I mean, the food scene in Cincinnati is amazing. So blessed to be part of it.
Well, you guys have been a huge part of that. You've been a trailblazer, and we can't thank you enough for fitting us in on, you know, the final countdown to this big opening that now I was excited before. Now I can't wait to see some of that. I cannot wait. So
awesome.
We thank you both.
Thanks for having us. This was
fun.
Thank
you very much for giving me your time.
Father-daughter therapy here.
We're here for you.
All right, Burl, get out your calendar. We have a date. So we now know that when Jeff Ruby's is opening Market Down, and they said it's not some big grand opening, huge party. You know, they want to just welcome the public as normal.
They're going to cut the ribbon and open the doors and be back to business.
I know, it'll be a lot of sign cutting this month. Paycor Stadium sign. And it seems like it's going to be a big reveal, too. I love a good reveal. It's almost like this is its own HGTV, like, whole series.
I think so, too. I mean, of course, Jeff is notorious for his storytelling, and it was fun watching Brittany at some times encourage him, and at other times, you know, feeling a little like, oh, he's oversharing. But we like when our guests
love
oversharing. I can't wait to see this piano that might have cost $250,000, but I'm sure Jeff got a deal on it. I mean, he's a dealer.
Yeah, definitely.
To his core. What are you most excited about?
You know what? The descriptions of the rooms, even if I might never go in them, I would like to peek in them and see. It is such style. I love going to Jeff Ruby's downtown. The chandeliers, I love chandeliers and everything. The Art Deco, I think it really speaks to Cincinnati's past with so many of our buildings being Art Deco. I can't wait to just see what they were describing.
It's going to be impressive. I don't think there's going to be – it's safe to say there will probably be not another restaurant like it in town, and I think that's what
by
they're
design.
Going for.
Seems.
By design. All right.
You want to tell everyone about why I called you on Saturday?
Oh, yeah. This is a good – well, you know, this is the That's So Cincinnati moment of the week portion of the podcast, and Sherry provided it for me this week because I was prepared for a very, like, quiet, lazy Saturday. I'm out for a run. And I see through my AirPods, I hear that you're calling me. And I will never not pick up a call from, you know, one of our top reporters because you could be calling just to tell me, you know, something mundane or whatever. You could call to tell me that we have a huge scandal brewing.
Which I didn't realize, but that actually is true. I've called you at all hours.
And I can't tell you the example I gave, you know, like why I will, you know. You could be calling about anything, but, you know, stop the presses kind of moment. I got to pick up the phone when Sherry Coolidge calls. And you called to invite me to dinner on Blanc.
I was like, as everyone knows, I wasn't at the podcast last week. COVID did strike our house, Alex and I, just to be on the safe side. We couldn't sit down with the Blackburn sisters. I couldn't go over to City Hall. Like, you just, you can't, you cannot, you had to be safe. And so we've kind of been on lockdown for a while. I did not get COVID. I'm the queen of COVID testing at this point. But so I had an extra seat for dinner. Blanc actually ended up having two. And I was like, who should I bring after all of the talk on this podcast in the Inquirer Twitter about dinner and Blanc? I was like,
And for listeners who might not know, your former co-host, Jason Williams, are
not a fan.
Not a fan. He's kind of like brought his rant on dinner on Blanc to like comedic levels.
Agreed.
Like he could
that's on purpose.
He could do I am, you know, naturally wired more like Jason when it comes to dressing up all fancy, and I owned nothing white. I mean, I dress kind of dark. I have some white dress shirts. I shouldn't say I don't own anything that's white, but white pants, I have, Sherry,
I
have never in my life owned a pair or worn a pair of white pants except for my Little League baseball pants. Those were white.
Well, now you'll wear them once a year.
Oh, my gosh. So, of course, my wife was not going to be denied an opportunity to go out with Sherry and do dinner en Blanc. So just quickly, for those unfamiliar with dinner en Blanc, tell us how it works.
You know, it's a surprise picnic. It's an international event, started in Paris, of people just, you know, kind of breaking into a park. You bring everything, you have a lovely dinner, and you leave the space as you found it. It's a very key part of dinner en Blanc, is that there's to be no trace of you. And they're very coordinated now, and Cincinnati is one of the host cities in the world. You know, Cold Iron Productions has the rights to it, and they do throw a surprise, basically picnic every year. There's like invites, and you get online and you're kind of part of it, but you can invite somebody like for even this year or next year emails. It's kind of billed as exclusive, but it's definitely not exclusive. Anyone I've ever said, you know, can this email, it goes out to them and then they can come, and it's inexpensive. You do pay. I mean, there's, you know, there are things that need to be done. Like barriers are set up. It's a surprise location. There are things to be done related to that. There's security. And this year they had the Cincinnati Brass Band, who was amazing.
It was
performing.
Right. Are we allowed to say where it was?
Yeah, definitely.
It was right in front of the School for Performing Arts.
Yes, on Central.
They blocked Central Parkway. They had people gather at different locations and then walk over. But I'm going to channel Jason right now. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, it was a nice event. And I really enjoyed it because out of all the events I've been to, this one was like a beautiful cross-section of everyone in Cincinnati. You had young, you had old, you had black, you had white, it was just like not your typical Cincinnati event. It was so diverse. I enjoyed running into people I haven't seen for a while, meeting new people. It was very fun watching people like you who get into the theme of extravagance, like setting the table, and you have to lug all this stuff with you. So the band was fantastic. Then they
I mean,
had a
really,
band.
For Alex, I was like, do you still have COVID? We tested that day. I was like,
so
I'm going to have to carry everything.
Thanks to COVID, I got to go. And after the brass band was done and they were singing, you know, movie songs and show tunes and all that, a trio, I would call them like funk, rock, R&B, 80s, 90s outfit called My Sister Sarah. Yes.
Yes.
Drums, guitar, singer, and they rocked. So people were dancing and everything like that. But now I'm going to do the rant for Jason.
Okay.
Is it's hard for some of us, okay, to understand the draw of paying. You said it doesn't cost that much, but you pay to go to an event. Yet you have to bring your tables, you have to bring chairs, you have to bring the food, you have to bring the drink, you schlep it all in yourself, and we were sweating setting that stuff up. I mean, so you're like working, you're setting it all up, and then you enjoy the dinner, and then you have to schlep it all home.
You do, but they provided the entertainment.
And you have to dress in white. Like,
that's
shouldn't
the best
I be
part.
Able to wear? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You know what? Honestly, it gave me a new appreciation for that part of town. We met over at City Hall, but I usually go from the Inquirer to City Hall. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't technically, I usually don't walk past that, you, like into the West End and that kind of that barrier corner there. If I'm going to go up, I'll take the streetcar or I'll drive. So I had to walk from City Hall to where we were and just kind of like taking in the old beautiful buildings. And I was kind of looking around and I was like, oh, all right. And then you kind of speed down Central Parkway, which of course council is like, stop speeding, everybody. Like, we all need to slow down. But you do really speed down Central Parkway. You don't really take in on right. what's there. Mm-hmm. So I had a little... That was a nice little stroll.
No, and you were the ultimate host of our little area. You have this nailed. You said you've been to 8 Dinner en Blancs?
I have.
Or Dinners en Blanc, yeah. I should say. Yeah, not Dinner en Blancs. Dinners en Blanc. And I hope Jason's not listening to this part, but I had a good time, Sherry.
Thank you for joining us.
I had fun complaining about it, but I take complaining to an art form sometimes. And that gave me a lot of fodder to work with, but we had a wonderful time, and I'm glad I answered the phone when you called that day.
Me too. All right, you guys, thanks for listening. This was our, you know, obligatory Dinner en Blanc conversation for the year. I promise we will not drag it out much longer. But again, thank you for listening. We have some exciting guests coming out. When your boss is your new co-host, you plan better. True story. Thanks, guys.